within the organization wondered whether or not, you know, that's something we should do. It was a compelling opportunity. And that business, those assets that we sold at a fair price for our shareholders, are really more valuable in the current owner's possession than they were for us. And I would also say that the individuals managing that company are better off today as a result of that transaction than they were as a part of our organization. So we've put together some estimates of proceeds from those businesses. They've been reasonably empirical on multiples of cash flow and those types of things. But we believe that those businesses generally are good business models, but are likely to be of more value in the hands of some other people than ours. An example of this I was mentioning to another person earlier. You know, in a business that's a purchase for resale and distribution, we do that okay in some parts of our business, but there's one of those business units where there's been sort of a sea change relative to purchase now and distributing as opposed to manufacturing and distributing. And we think that business would probably be worth more to somebody else that really does that as their primary focus. So we hope we've been conservative in establishing the estimate of proceeds. As we said on the big piece of this, we've already engaged an investment banker and have had some preliminary discussions, very preliminary, Laura, but we will wind that up pretty quickly here now. So
yeah, Ira, specific to the aluminum segment, that business is extremely well managed. They outperform their peers in that industry. It is a business that maybe isn't best in a public company's hands, but those people are good operators of a business. They probably need a parent that has a willingness to invest in international markets, and it was a fit issue with Leggett. It's a good business and will perform extremely well in another owner's hands. Maybe a public company isn't the right home for that business.
And then when you think about just the reduction in the CapEx that you're looking at and the reduction in expenditures on acquisitions, do you think you've been earning kind of less than that, I don't know, 10% or so cost of capital hurdle on those as you look back over the last two or three years?
Some of them. And that's an interesting question. But the answer would be yes on some of them, but we've got many of our operations do an extremely good job of buying a widget maker or an asset and depreciating it over 7 or 10 years and running it for 12 or 15 or more years. And of course, the return on those assets, on the net asset, goes way up once you get past that depreciable life. But some of those, yes, we have not seen an adequate return. I'd say the majority of them for that. Remember, half of that capital expenditure, Ira, goes to sort of maintenance, things that fixing the roof and, you know, replacing the motors and those and the moving equipment, material handling equipment. The other half, a portion of it, might not have returned adequately, but most of it would have. That's the way I would respond to that. Okay, Cliff, or wait a minute, who is it? Susan.
You relatively recently put an acquisition role in place in each of the business units. And given the change in acquisitions and your whole thought process there, can you give us some idea of how that role might change or might function in the future?
Yeah, before I'll let Carl expand on it, but you're right, we put some very competent individuals in place. I would say that they weren't put in place for acquisition, per se. They're business development people, which includes acquisition, and they will continue to be those individuals that the segment leaders rely heavily on for targeting and enterprise valuation and those sorts of things for acquisitions. But they weren't predominantly there for acquisitions, and those people are still with us. Carl?
Yeah, Susan, thank you for giving me an opportunity, because those five people are extremely capable, extremely dedicated, that The use of two of them has shifted into a strategic planning analysis role, helping us through that process. They have been engaged with the help of the consulting group to kind of train the trainers sort of thing. And they're very competent in those roles. So they're, Dave made reference to the two business units that have kind of been the pilots for that. Those business development folks have been engaged in that. One of the business development directors has raised his hand and said, I'll do anything you need me to do. He's in the process of shutting one of the store fixtures facilities down. Another is engaged in the strategic, the rapid restructuring of the store fixtures business. The other, the fifth, actually, is housed in the aluminum segment and will be working hand in hand with that investment banker to help us market that company. So all five of them had full-time jobs before. They have more than that now. Well, thank you.
What was it that had those two units initiate this new emphasis on strategic planning? And how quickly do you think you can spread that benchmark across the other divisions? And then I have a quick follow-up on compensation.
Okay. Cliff, the answer to those two was they are, one is in grow, one is in core. So we wanted one in a balance. One of them has a domestic footprint. One of them has an international footprint that has a very complex environment with the understanding what the customer mix shift may or may not be. So it was the ability to do in-depth analysis with those two businesses because they were really kind of good drivers or good examples of the process for the others to follow. The engagement of the others is as soon as we get through the month of December, which is our budget review month, made more intense because of our fixed and divest activities this year than most. It's always intense, but it'll be more intense this year. So 1st of January, we'll engage in the process of moving that strategic planning process through the rest of the business units, and we'll have all of them engaged to some form or fashion throughout 2008.
And the second question, and you know it's a pet peeve of mine, that if you don't change the comp system, you don't change the behavior patterns. So can you give us some more granularity on what you've done in terms of changing the incentive compensation, particularly at the business unit level?
Well, I'll let you talk about business unit, and then I'll pile on from a higher level.
The business unit compensation historically had been 75% of their comp was based on their performance to EBIT budget at the facility level and then rolled up. So a plant manager would have 75% based on hitting a target to his budgeted EBIT at just his location. Then the business unit manager would be the aggregation of those, and the segment head the aggregation of those. That's correct.
That was historically. That's correct.
Historically. And then 25% of their bonus was based on a corporate RONA, attainment of a corporate RONA target.
Which they don't have any impact on.
Minimal. Today.
In small little pieces.
January 1, 2008. At every business unit level, 50% of their management incentive is based on a return calculation at that specific level. At the branch level, there will be specific targets for KPIs, key performance indicators, that would be at the supervisory level and below. So the safety manager is held accountable for the safety statistics, whatever those KPIs happen to be at that level. But then you get to the branch manager, and it's the returns for that branch. 50% is returns for that branch. The other 50% is the historic performance to his EBIT budget. So it is a significant switch. Sometime in the future, will it be January 1st, 2009? We don't know, but certainly before 2010, there will be a very tight correlation to the end results of the TBR, the total business unit return targets that come out of the strategic planning process, and they will be overlaid onto those individual business unit managers. and then go to higher level.
I would say for the non-operating executives of the corporation, we have historically been tied to return on net assets, Cliff. The segment heads and below operationally were on this program that Carl laid out. We'll continue to be held responsible for return on net assets, but there is a significant piece of our incentive going forward that will be tied directly to shareholder return. In the case of Carl and I, it'll be totally tied. So if we don't meet total shareholder return targets that are established, then that piece of our incentive will be zero. We just feel strongly about that. I mean, we certainly line up with you. And felt that it was because of these major changes we were making, we needed to make that change in incentive criteria at the same time. Bud?
Yeah, a couple of additional questions I have. You talked about the dividend increase of past, Matt, I think of $0.04 a year annually. What you used to have a dividend policy of, I think, 30% of the trailing 3 years income. What's the new dividend policy going forward? What kind of increases should investors expect, and how to measure or gauge that?
Well, it will be higher than that 30% to 33%. And we also know, based upon EPS, which is going to be reduced by some one-time cost, you know, cash associated with it, but the EPS will be reduced, that we're going to see some significant spike up in the short term as a percentage of earnings. Over the longer haul, the board of directors will decide, but it's not out of the question to be looking at 50%, 55%, something
slide
like that.
Slide 39, double D, I think will show the 50 to 60% dividend payout as a okay. Range.
All right, and next question is the leverage policy was stated as 30 to 40% of total cap. How are you stating that policy now? What is your goal on that?
That has not changed. It's still there at the bottom bullet point there on slide 39. And again, it's certainly our anticipation that relative to that range, we'll be at the low end of that range.
And do you want to venture a way to characterize that as a debt to EBITDA, or do you look at it that way as well, Matt?
We look at it that way as well. And of course, Kevin right here could reconfirm all that, as our conversations with the rating agencies are very heavily oriented towards cash flow protection measures, et cetera. But our EBITDA is in the neighborhood of $600 million this year, roughly, as everyone probably knows here. And our debt right now is about $1 billion. And we expect those coverages to go up as we execute on the items we've talked about.
It's been running, I think, somewhere near 2. Is that about where we should expect it, if I remember right?
I don't have a specific. We haven't anchored in. This is what we want as our cash flow coverage, but we can assure you that, A, we don't expect to have our debt go up in the amount that we sit on today, and we do expect our cash flow generation to go up.
And you, David, you've talked about a little bit about a more rigorous acquisition criteria. Can you kind of phrase some of that quantitatively, as well as the fit issue? And you've now got four segments. Do we expect a fifth segment, or will there be another fifth segment? In the past, you've talked about even 5 or 6 or 7 segments.
Yeah. I'll address the acquisition criteria first, Bud. Some of the things that we will look at more critically than we have in the past will be the growth rate of a particular target, the technical content of that target, the overall market impacts from not just a national but an international perspective. We'll continue, and we've always done a pretty good job of defining synergies, and so we'll continue to look at those things. But we'll be much more in-depth in our analysis relative to the geopolitical aspects, the demographics, all of the things that might come to bear on a particular acquisition. We will continue to make acquisitions. They will be companies that we have a higher confidence level in their performance. And would we ultimately have more than four segments? I think it's reasonable to assume that. We're just not willing to predict when that might happen. For the next couple of years or so, we intend, and we'll make acquisitions in that period of time, but it's not our plan to go out there and find that next segment to bolt on or to add to the portfolio. If it happens, we would certainly be communicating about it.
Okay. And just my last question, organizational fallout. Has there been any organizational fallout with the change into TSR and your change in strategic direction with any of the key leaders, or do you expect any?
No, contrarily. It's been, I'll let some of these guys address it too. It's been very positively supported. People understand. Remember, many of our employees are shareholders. And so they, like we all do in this room, want very much to see that share performance improve. There is a feeling of understanding within the organization. There's a feeling of anxiety, excitement in the organization. Obviously, we've got a number of our employees that are associated with the parts of the business that we're planning to divest. Carl and I have spent a good bit of time with the senior management of the aluminum group, and I can tell you that, of course, they're personal friends of ours. They're highly dedicated, highly competent people, and we have not at this point had anything other than strong support. Felix?
They might go ahead and jump in what you and Carl are going to do tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Those of you that know us well know that we believe in communicating very openly to the extent that we can, and timing is very important. So we're gonna go get on the airplane and fly back to Carthage, and then this group's gonna get back together, and we're going to coalesce our thoughts on two presentations that we're making tomorrow. The first of them is early in the morning. We're meeting with the Carthage-based employees, and we're going through this same detail, but more importantly, we're gonna go into a Q&A. So every question that they have, we will respond to. And then for those people, of course, Carthage is only a small portion of our employee base. That afternoon, I think it's at 1:30, is that correct?
That's right.
1:30, we'll be having a webcast for all of our employees. And so tomorrow will be a very important, very, very important day for us.
And the key to that is, as Dave said, to allow or encourage all of those employees that have questions to ask them. That because of the disclosure requirements, the pool of folks that knew where we were headed broadened significantly last night with a press release. Many other than the most senior managers didn't know where we were headed.
Yes, Pat?
David, just one elaboration on the comp issue as it applies particularly to the more senior individuals and especially to the two of you with all of your bonuses, I understand, being TSR related. I certainly understand the use of TSR and in an absolute term over a longer period of time. But on an annual basis, there's a whole lot of difference between earning a 12 to 15% TSR in an up 20 year versus a down 20 year. Yeah. And it strikes me as potentially counterproductive on this is only on an annual basis, annual basis, to use an absolute rather than a relative benchmark.
Right. Yeah, let me elaborate on it, Pat. That's a good point. There will be a return on net asset portion to our bonus. So we will not lose focus on return on net assets. But the compensation committee, and I strongly agree with this, felt that for the senior management, we need a substantial amount of our incentive to be tied to these targets. Now, the TSR will be a three-year average. I didn't know how much detail y'all wanted, but it'll be a three-year average, and it'll be compared to a peer group of companies, and if we meet or exceed, if our average meets or exceeds those targets, we'll be paid on some prorated basis through restricted stock. And if it doesn't, we won't. We'll still have a cash element of our bonus. It will only be paid if certain return on net asset criteria are met.
So it is relative and it is multi-year.
That's correct. Yes, correct, Pat. I should have given you that detail before. Okay. Well, we appreciate very much your attendance here today. And we understand these are huge changes for the company. We're extremely excited. Hope you will be too. And wish everybody safe travels. Thank you.
Please give us a call.